Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now representing Bloomberg, the mayor's longtime press secretary, Stu Loser, is leaving for the private sector. We are delighted that he's coming on now for an exit interview. So we will get Stu's take on the Bloomberg legacy and his own and see what he has to say about the New York press corps, who he has had to deal with for the last 6 years or so. Hi, Stu. Thank you very much for coming on and doing this.
Brian, thanks for having me.
You joined the Bloomberg administration in 2006 mm-hmm. after his first reelection. What was the situation at that time? Did you think the mayor needed any kind of image makeover?
No, I didn't. The situation at the time was we as a city had recovered stronger and faster from 9/11 than I think anyone had ever anticipated. But there were questions about whether or not it was real, whether or not it was sustained, whether or not it was a dead cat bounce. And Mike Bloomberg, a person who's not known for an excess of sentimentality, said, "We have an agenda. We are going to get things done. We have control of the schools. We have responsibility for the schools. The schools, for the first time, operate for the kids and not the people who work there. And we are going to push ahead. We are going to rebuild our economy. We're going to take on new challenges." You saw in the second term illegal guns. You saw sustainability, the biggest and broadest agenda undertaken by any municipality at any level of government.
Plan YC 2030, looking forward to what things would be like in terms of sustainability and population mm-hmm. in 2030.
Yes. And I mean, that was what the second term was about. The second term, when I came in after having worked on the campaign, was about doing more than we were able to do in the first term. And that continues to this day. He continues to drive us to get as many things done, to get as many changes cemented as we can in the way the city government works and the way the city operates before we leave.
You had actually worked for the Mark Green campaign in 2001.
I did.
The original election mm-hmm. in which Bloomberg came into office. Was it difficult at all for you to, you know, switch sides, if that's the right way to put it even, and go to work for Bloomberg in 06?
Well, look, in the intervening period, I worked for Carl McCall, and I worked for Chuck Schumer, the senior senator from the state of New York. And when I left Chuck, on a lot of issues, on issues related to, with the exception of trade, on virtually every issue, Mike Bloomberg was probably a little bit to the left of Chuck Schumer. He's a little bit to the left of him on guns, which was a huge, important Chuck issue. He was a little bit to the left of him on lots of social issues. So actually going to work for the Republican in this sort of weird way of New York politics meant that I actually had to move and sort of tack left a little bit.
Stu Loser, Mayor Bloomberg's outgoing press secretary, my guest on WNYC. And I guess, folks, we can call this a press availability, where you are the reporter, and if you want to call up and ask Stu Loser a question, you can do so right now, 212-433-WNYC. You're the citizen journalist, 212-433-9692. And we'll talk more about you mm-hmm. and the job of being a press secretary as we go. But I want to play a few clips of Mayor Bloomberg on his signature issues, some of them at least, and get your quick thoughts. So here is the mayor from his initial campaign.
If 4 years from now, reading scores and math scores aren't significantly better, then I will look in a mirror and say that I have been a failure.
And I know you'll tout the success on certain test scores, but I also want to know, since he inherited a city where a shocking percentage of kids can't read or compute at grade level, and he leaves a city where that's still the case, is it frustrating what a big, difficult ship this is to turn around?
No, it's true that we have a lot of people with problems, and it's actually not the same people. We have new people coming in every day, people who every time we do test scores, we talk about early language learners, ELLs, kids English language learners, I'm sorry, kids who come here with little skills, and that happens
immigrants.
Every day. Immigrants, because people continue to come to New York because they know both across the country and also around the world, as jobs are being created, they're being created here. But the answer actually is no. The frustration, I guess, the mayor has, and to some degree I share with him, is that as we have continued to elevate the standard by which we judge ourselves, as the state continues to make the tests harder, something we've called on, the gains, while still existing, have decreased over the last couple of years because the tests are harder, which is what we called for and what we should be doing. We should be preparing kids better. We should be holding them to a higher standard. And if there's a frustration on the part of the mayor, I think it's that there is a sort of decontextualized analysis that doesn't take that into account.
Here is the mayor on guns.
Soothing words are nice, but maybe it's time that the two people who want to be president of the United States stand up and tell us what they're going to do about it. Because this is obviously a problem across the country.
The mayor just recently, after the movie theater massacre, is this one frustrating because the states where the problem originates will not listen to him at all?
Well, we take on big issues. Sort of the hallmark of Mike Bloomberg is they take on big issues that where you don't necessarily see a path to success. We spent a long time developing Plan YC, for a plan for a greener, greater New York through 2030. We spent an enormous amount of time debating internally about whether or not we should put the political resources and the political capital behind congestion pricing. We as staff members said to the mayor again and again, it's going to be dead on arrival. It's never going to happen. It is a political danger, and it's going to cost you your popularity. He said, if that's the only reason not to try this, then we should do it. Absolutely. I don't care about my political capital. I have the capital to spend it, and I'm going to spend it trying to make the city a better place. So on guns, it's hard. So far proven to be an insurmountable problem. We have had successes. We did stop the NRA from passing what was called a Federal Reciprocity Act, in that if you have a gun permit in Florida, a gun permit in North Carolina, Arkansas, a concealed carry permit, then that would be operative in New York. It would be a disaster for us. It passed the House. We're able to stop it in the Senate. We have had a small number of victories, which, by the way, comprise about 100% of the victories that have ever been won against the gun lobby. But yes, it's hard.
Is that ultimately, by the way, why he didn't run for president this year as an independent? I'm guessing that he had the desire. He certainly had the money to mount a serious third-party challenge to the Democrats and the Republicans. But I've heard various analysts say that ultimately a candidate with his positions on guns and maybe a few other social issues, but guns most of all, could never get elected president of the United States.
Well, he has said this often. He said a number of times that you lose half the people for wanting to limit the ability to carry a hidden handgun on your body in Grand Central Terminal. He says you come out and you say you're in favor, or you believe strongly in evolution. You believe that people should be able to marry who they want if they love them without regard to gender. And soon you have a quarter of the people, half the people. The reason why he didn't run for president this time is because he had reelected the city of New York. He said, I wanted to stay. I was an extraordinary circumstance. I have more work to do to rebuild the city's economy. I have a big job. I'm not done yet, and I'm going to stay and do it.
Mayor Bloomberg's outgoing press secretary, Stu Loza, with us on public health.
Health is about more than just going to the doctor regularly. It's about eating healthy food, having a place to exercise and breathe fresh air, and living in safe and healthy housing.
Is the smoking ban his biggest accomplishment in a certain way?
You could say it in a way, but it's not in a way. The way is not because of what he's done in New York, but because we did it in New York, because we showed that businesses don't suffer, that people come to expect the ability to go out, go to a restaurant, go to a bar, not have their clothes smell like smoke afterwards. We have shown.
And it was a worker safety issue primarily.
It was. That was the argument. It was a smoke-free workplace argument. We've shown that it can work. Los Angeles had a smoking ban for years, a similar smoking ban, and nobody followed it. We did it, and all of a sudden countries across Europe, Ireland, and Italy, and I believe Iceland now have smoking bans. Now, I was at a elementary school wedding. The wedding of a friend of mine from elementary school in Florida. We went to a bar. Between the time we went into the bar after the wedding, got a beer and came out, we were covered in smoke and we couldn't believe it. The expectation around the world has changed, and because of that, lives have changed. And Mike Bloomberg would argue that, and I think I would argue as well, that Had he just been a philanthropist, had he stepped down from Bloomberg LP and just started creatively and intelligently investing his money and giving it away, he would not have had the effect on saving people's lives that just the replication of the smoking ban around the world.
A listener did point out, however, I don't want to get bogged down on this, but some of the credit that the mayor got in the press recently for the decline in the lung cancer rate recently in New York City maybe is premature, because it takes 20 years for lung cancer to develop. So even if the smoking ban took effect at the very beginning of his administration, it's too early to see a reduction
in
lung
cancer,
from that.
But in heart diseases, the effect starts the day. Things should get better for you the day you quit smoking. You see the ads that we put on the air after 12 minutes, after 24 hours, after 2 weeks. And the decrease in heart disease is significant. A lot of factors, healthier diets, more exercise, sure, but without a doubt, the evidence is there.
So people are against them and then for them on smoking. I think it's, you know, it's a generalization, but to some degree, once they saw the proof in the pudding.
People, you forget in 2003 when when the mayor was pushing nonpartisan elections in this city, Congressman Anthony Weiner, a smart political strategist, went out and said, if you're against the smoking ban, vote against nonpartisan elections. Of course, it failed 3-4-1, but...
And now it gets made fun of so much for the sugary drink proposal, and the industry runs ads saying it's about freedom, which, you know, I think is a very degraded notion of freedom, if that's what you think freedom is about. But this seems to be pretty unpopular. Does the mayor rant and rave to you, like, people don't get it, this is like the smoking ban, obesity, diabetes? Does he rant and rave to you about
this? No, to the contrary. If things are going too easily for us, if we go out, and my job is to help him see all sides of the issues and then go out and make a case. And there's a paradox. If we make the case almost too well and it's easy, deep in the back of Mike Bloomberg's mind, he thinks maybe we aren't pushing the envelope enough. Maybe this isn't hard enough. Let's see what else we can do, what other big changes we can make in an ideal world to improve people's lives, to make them live longer and better. If there isn't pushback, it's almost as if he thinks, wasn't bold enough, and I got to try harder.
Mayor Bloomberg's outgoing press secretary, Stu Loser, with us, reviewing some of the things from his 6 years representing Mayor Bloomberg to the press and the public. And on the burning issue of the playground slides that are too hot in the summer.
It was hot. You know, we'll have to live through it. Certainly nothing is dangerous. If it's hot, don't sit on it.
If it's hot, don't sit on it.
That was a great – that was
– Did you write that line?
That was purely him. I told him he was going to get this question from a, as I remember it, the veteran political reporter Dave Evans from WABC-TV. There were people out there suggesting that we should build roofs over the playgrounds. Mayor thought this was insane. I said, you're going to get the question. People are saying, well, why don't we build plastic slides? And let me tell you, I've talked to the Parks Department. A plastic slide lasts 5 years, a metal slide. My mother-in-law, bless her, she grew up in Williamsburg. She calls them sliding ponds. And some of these sliding ponds are still in existence. We've replaced them, but they can last 40 or 50 or 60 years. We're not going to replace them with plastic. And that was a classic moment, I think, in New York's history, in the mayor's history, because people came up to me afterwards and still to this day say, you know, I don't agree with Mike Bloomberg on everything, but he calls him like he sees him. I remember when he told that mother and those people, those crazy people who said, my kid's feet got burned on a slide, and he said, don't put your kid on the slide. He's like, well, if he's going to stand up and say that, then when he offends me and I disagree with him on sanitation fines or whatever the issue is, at least I know he calls him as he sees him and he treats everyone fairly.
I grew up in Queens, and we also called them sliding ponds. And I only realized, of course, when I was a grown-up, because I thought, what's a pond?
Right.
But
it's slide upon.
You slide upon
right.
The thing. One more clip. After being asked in the 2009 mayoral debate about why there aren't more Latinos in his administration, the mayor replied.
Más o menos 40% de nuestros directores y 30% de nuestros nombrados son personas de colores. No sé cuándo son Latinos u otros grupos, pero...
And, you know, he gets criticized in some quarters for his Spanish that is, let us say, unpolished. But I can see it's a real outreach to a large percentage of the city's population. What kinds of conversations have you had with him about speaking Spanish in public?
he does it more and more. He does it better and better. He often says, you know, they sometimes when someone says, "Oh, your Spanish isn't so great," he says, "You know, I'm not exactly Winston Churchill in English," and that, you know, there is an important theory that when your linguistic skills approach each other in your native, the language you're learning approaches where you are in your native tongue, that shows how far you've come. It's something he works incredibly hard at. I think that certainly before I worked for him, I was among the people who were skeptical. Does he really do this every day? He does it virtually every day.
Did you or he anticipate that question and kind of write out that Spanish language answer?
My job is to anticipate questions. I'm never gonna sit and tell you I didn't anticipate a question.
Does the mayor know about the El Blumbito Twitter feed?
He did, and he responded. He was asked about it after this came up during Hurricane Irene, and afterwards he was asked about it and responded in Spanish. We're in a firehouse in I want to say Bay Ridge or something like that, and he just off the cuff responded in Spanish. That he, I think he said something to the effect of "Estoy mejorando," I'm improving.
Mayor Bloomberg's outgoing press secretary Stu Loser. Let's take a few listener calls. Press availability by the press secretary. One last time, Elizabeth in Washington Heights. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a fan of the mayor's. I voted for him. But I wonder, why does he have such a tin ear when it comes to parent and community involvement in schools? He's not, his administration has not been especially welcoming to community involvement. It's very hard for regular people, regular parents, to figure out how to really engage with the Department of Education and advocate for their children.
Thank you. And I took Elizabeth because this is one of the most frequent negative threads of calls we've gotten over the years about the mayor.
Understandably, we hear it a lot. It is two points, I would say. One is Joel Klein, with the mayor's full blessing and actually a little bit of jealousy, invented the parent-teacher coordinator position, a person whose full-time job it is to be there with a cell phone number, a number posted, available at all times to help parents navigate the bureaucracy. That's point number one. Point number two, one thought about this criticism is a thought we share about a lot of criticism about the city of that we hear from the mayor. It's important to remember, it's actually very difficult to remember how far we have come as a city, how elevated our expectations are for delivery of government services. We had great mayors. We had some of the best mayors in the world before Mike Bloomberg. But you mentioned that I worked for Mark Green before I worked for Mike Bloomberg. This morning I was up early with one of my kids, and I saw on a shelf a book that Mark wrote in the year 2000. I took it down. He very nicely inscribed it. He's a great guy. It was called Public Advocate Mark Green's Guide to Coping in New York City. So the number two official in the city of New York in the year 2000, 12 years ago, and the standard that he wanted to elevate us to was coping. It's important to remember how the schools work with community school boards stepping off points for political aspiring political people. My wife's a Democratic district leader. It's great to get your start in politics, but in schools aren't necessarily the way. It's important to remember how far we've come. Of course there's more to do, and of course the next mayor, we all builds on it.
Were you surprised by the pushback by parents on closing failing schools? Like, here we are trying to close the failing schools and replace them with new schools, and you're protesting in support of your failing schools.
There is one of the hardest jobs any press secretary has. Any person who does communications for a living is negotiating with the lawyers in an organization about what you can and can't say and what words are. And you have to say you have to be very specific that you're closing a school, the law doesn't work. When in fact, if we could say more broadly and more openly and more casually, school's going to be open next year, new management team. That people say you shouldn't close the school, just replace half the teachers and maybe the principal and open it up again. And we say that's exactly what we're doing, but we aren't actually legally allowed to say that.
John in Bensonhurst, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate the improvements in general that the mayor and his subordinates have done with the parks, but I have a big question about Union Square Park in Manhattan. I walk by there almost every day on my way home to get the subway, And there's such an increased police presence and barricades at night. It used to be open 24/7. I was told by some cops that because of the perceived threat of Occupy Wall Street types that they have to lock the park up at night. But what's the story behind this? And is that park ever going to be available to all users 24/7 like it has been up until the recent past?
Do you know that one in particular?
I don't know off the head. Jen Falk, who worked with me at City Hall, was Dan Doctoroff's spokesperson, runs the bid around the area. And actually, I spend a lot of time in Union Square Park now. I have young kids, and the playground is extraordinary. It's like a destination playground. People come from all over. See people driving. The idea that 10 years ago that people would drive in from the suburbs to come there is incredible. Now, closing it at night, there are complicating factors. Free speech, letting people have equal access and free speech does sometimes run into complications and results in things like you can't be in every park every time 24 hours a day.
John, thank you for your call. I know you got to go in a few minutes. I want to get your take on the press corps, and I'm going to play one clip of maybe one of the most memorable exchanges, though it wasn't fun, between the mayor and a reporter, Ozzie Pabra, who was with the New York Observer at that time, during the third campaign in 2009, when part of the mayor's rationale for running for a third term was that he was so better qualified than anybody else, maybe uniquely qualified to deal with the financial emergency that had hit after 2008. But then he said things were getting better and pointed to the improvements in the city's economy. And Ozzie asked,
If the economy is turning around, as you said, does that mean that the rationale for extending term limits, which was the fiscal challenge?
Why don't you just get serious questions here?
But the question is...
The rationale for extending term limits is
was
the city council voted it, and the public's going to have a chance on November 3rd to say what they want. And I don't think we have to keep coming back to that. When you have a serious question about the economy, I'd be happy to answer it. Anything else? Thank you very much. Nothing else?
He did not like that question. What about dealing with the press corps in general, and are there most persistent reporters who you would put at the top of your list?
Well, I think that I've been lucky to work with an extraordinary group of people at City Hall and at city agencies, but also with reporters around the reporters who cover us. They are a phenomenally hardworking, dedicated, thorough, fair bunch of reporters, by and large. We have few disagreements. If you look at the toxicity of the relationship between the press corps that covers the presidential campaigns and the candidate staff, and to some extent the White House staff, and you look at what goes on in New York City, particularly considering that the mayor is out doing a full Q&A, taking any question three or four times a week, as opposed to three or four times a year for other principals. It's extraordinary. We treat each other with a great deal of respect. What we in the administration ask for out of our reporters isn't good coverage, but fair coverage. We think that fair coverage will be good, and by and large, that's what we get.
You are a determined tweeter. Do you have a favorite political tweeter?
Well, you know, Ozzie, who you just referenced, is great because he's extraordinarily well read. And if you get Ozzie to retweet something that you've said, then you can rest assured that virtually it's sort of like the old joke. Oh yes, you know, only 4,000 customers, but the right 4,000 customers. That's what Ozzie has. I don't actually know what his number is, and I hope and presume that he's tweeting this about me talking about him tweeting as we say it. So, you know, between Ozzie and NYT Fridge, the New York Times Fridge, I think those are the two most important and most influential tweeters in city government.
And just make a little bit of news for us before you go. The delay of the bike sharing program until this spring, mm-hmm. just announced today. How come?
The city and Citicorp, Citibank, contracted with the same people who have been running the successful programs in places like Boston and D.C. To build one in New York. Ours is a little bit different in that New York City taxpayers aren't putting any money forward, unlike in some places where there actually is a taxpayer subsidy. They're not taking power off the grid or anything. The contractor, the software developer that this company, Alta, has been using, they've ceased their relationship, or they ceased to work together well, and it's taking time to get a software system that works for a city as big and complex as ours up and running. It is amazing how far the notion that when I came to City Hall in 2006, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have YouTube, all of which are important ways of communicating. It's almost unthinkable to think that we were just surviving with WNYC and Room 9 and a dedicated press corps. It was okay, but it's better now. Bike share, even without having it, has become this essential thing that we're missing.
You're going to the private sector. You're going to miss politics?
I will. I'm looking forward to next year. I think like a lot of people in New York, I watch all the machinations of the presidential race, and I think, boy, there's a lot of this going on, and it is invading my life in a lot of ways. And by the way, my vote doesn't really actually count for anything. Next year, we'll be turning over the City Hall. There'll be a new mayor, arguably for the first time in 20 years, a lifetime away. People, last time we had a mayor, some people had pagers. Nobody had more than that. Last time we fully emptied an administration like this, it was a long time ago in a very different place.
Will he endorse?
He may, but as a New Yorker, I am looking forward to not necessarily being in the thick of, but watching closely as we have a debate about what the future of the city should be like.
Oh, and so with all these references to the changed media landscape, just tell me, what does the mayor read first in the morning? Times, Daily News, Post, Journal, email, or Twitter feed?
He actually studiously changes the order of the papers he reads. Sometimes Times, sometimes Post, sometimes News, sometimes Journal, also the FT first, the Financial Times. He specifically changes the order so that he doesn't get in a mindset of reading something in the Post and then seeing how the News covers it or vice versa.
That is a very politic answer by the press secretary toward all the competing news organizations in town. Is it true?
It's true. It's true. He's also very studious that if a photographer shows up outside his house and he feels like he wants to do the guy a favor, he will be very careful to hold that guy's newspaper under his arm when the paper comes. And if he thinks that this guy that he doesn't really want to be bothered, he will be very careful to put the competitor's newspaper under his arm.
All right. Tell him he's got to come here and do another one-on-one soon. Okay?
I will do that.
Stu Loser, after 6 years, the outgoing press secretary for Mayor Bloomberg. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.